Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Welcome to episode 105 of Talking Golf Getaways. Thanks for finding us wherever you consume podcasts. iTunes, Audioboom, Stitcher, always, of course, on the Golf News Net platform at golfnewsnet.com. I'm Mitch Lawrence in Myrtle Beach. He is Darren Bunch in Bakersfield, and a brand new development. Bakersfield isn't, but this is. Home to the Rio Bravo Country Club. Darren, how does it feel? You are actually a country club member.
That's right. Since the last time we recorded, I have become a country club member. I'm a member at Rio Bravo Country Club, a 1975 Robert Muir Graves design. And it's dog friendly, which is the most important part. That's what sold me. I went in and said, look, I want to be a member, but I want to be able to bring my dog with me. And they said, okay. So great, fun golf course. It's got one incredibly terrible, horribly designed par five that is like scaling Mount Everest. You go straight up a hill. It's like 600 yards and everything is sloped like 45 degrees to the right. But other than that, it is an absolute, it's fun to play. I love it. Three hour rounds out there when I go out. It's the perfect thing for me and the price was right. It's one of these courses that was going to be closed down. Basically, the owner was going to sell the property, and a group of members got together and purchased it and brought it back to life. And they're really doing great things there.
How cool. Two questions. One, when is the member guest so I can make plans? Two, did Robert Muir Graves, maybe possibly he had one leg that was shorter than the other when he designed it? So when he was walking that par five, it seemed flat to him?
I don't know, man. I have yet to figure out a way to hit the green. to hit the fairway on that hole. And what happens is then you hit one down the middle or to the right side and it takes a kick and it ends up down kind of in this drainage area that is grassed down along the tree line. And you turn yourself into a 600 yard four shot par five. So I've never met anybody who's birdied it. I've made a par there once, and I had to make a long putt to do it. It's got a great green, really fun green up there if you could ever get to it.
Well, so clearly this is now your life's work.
It is.
And we'll continue to hear about this par five, I'm pretty sure, forever.
It is. I was playing it the other day, and I was texting with our buddy Eric Hart at the time. We talk about golf design quite a bit. And I was texting him a picture of each shot I had after the upcoming shot, after the shot I'd hit. And basically every shot I texted him was just me trying to hit it around trees.
And he went, this looks like fun. You want to play this every day? Really? All right. Well, we're glad you found us on social medias. You can find Darren, of course, at Getaways Golf on Twitter. At Golf Getaways on Instagram. You can find me at Mitch Lawrence, LauranceE, literally everywhere. Today, once again, probably just because we love doing it, but more importantly, Darren, there's really a good reason. As much as it seems like we've talked about it before, we're going to talk some more about Cabot.
Yeah, we were talking the other day. It feels like we talk about Cabot and Cape Breton Island all the time. I mean, people bring it up in their emergency nines. We've done an episode. The episode just before this was about Nova Scotia. Mm-hmm. We talked with Ian Andrew about Highlands Links. We talked with Keith Cutton, who we're going to mention in this, about his work at Cabot. But we've never done just a podcast that was all Cabot, kind of an essential Cabot Links, if you will, kind of like the essential destination package that we did many years ago with Golf Getaways and Fairways and Greens magazine. So today, we're actually going to dedicate a full supersized episode to Cabot. We're going to highlight our 9 favorite things about Cabot as a whole. Plus, we're going to offer up 5 suggestions that we believe could make the incredible Cabot Cliffs experience even better for the average player.
And I think another reason we're actually doing this, because we've been a couple times, and both times coming into this particular part of the year. So even though we might not be going back soon, relatively soon, it feels like when you say dare to dream, it's almost like we're daring to dream by talking about it at this time of year.
I want to go back tomorrow.
Yeah, I do too. I want to go back today. I want to go back yesterday.
That means right now.
No, I want to go back yesterday. That means I'd be there, not talking to you.
Good point, because it does take a little while to get there.
All right. Before we get to Cabot, we couldn't do this without both you, the listeners, and without our new sponsor, and we are really thrilled. Two Under, you've heard us talk about it. Two Under apparel, comfort, enjoyment, fit, revolutionary design based on athletic performance, great for everyday wear as well. I personally am not doing one lick of athletic performance today, but I'm still wearing them. They feel great. Styles, designs, a personal asset management, utilizing, of course, Two Under's patented Joey pouch. And Darren, I know that you are going to tell us something now that before you weren't really able to dive into, so go ahead.
Oh, the Joey pouch, for one thing, just unbelievable. It leaves me speechless, the Joey pouch does. But I'm going to give up a little radio secret here. Sometimes we represent products, and I know this is going to be a shock, that are good but maybe not great. But they're advertisers, so we do it. We got to make a living, you know, got to get paid.
No.
But Two Under is not one of those products. When you say it's life-changing, and you have said that before, I never fully understood what you meant until I'd worn a pair to play golf on a hot day. I mean, just the design, the great fabric assures no skin-on-skin contact, no chafing, no heat and moisture buildup. Every pair of Two Under is constructed with high-quality nylon yarn non-roll waistbands that prevent irritation in the waistband areas. It was so great, and you know, the perk of this job when you have a new advertiser is that sometimes you get a little bit of free product, you get a little swag. I don't know if we want to call underwear swag or not. But after I tried them and played a round of golf with the free pair that I got, I went out and bought more and more and more pairs with my own money using the promo code GNN20 to get 20% off after our initial testing. So it's pretty amazing, and I never knew I could be quite this excited about a new pair of underwear.
See, I have done the same thing because we both got promotional underwear. Our great friend Jack Curry has helped us with that. But both of us have spent our own money to get more. And I think that really says a lot about it. No kidding around. If I were, it'd be one thing. If I was Jordan Spieth and Two Under was my sponsor, I'd have 100 pair of them right now for free. But that not being the case, not only am I not Jordan Spieth, but I don't have Two Under as a personal sponsor. I think it says a lot about it that both you and I have actually spent our own money to have more. And I think that's what people should really pay attention to. Both of us are thrilled with them. It's not just us. The thing I love when I started reading about Two Under is the variety of athletes that wear these. There's all different kinds. Like Darren said, everyday wear, there's real performance Two Under. And they've got motocross guys. They've got, I mean, you name it, the hardest sports, people are wearing these. Additionally, obviously on the golf course, William McGirt, David Toms, Jerry Kelly, the one I love, Mike Dobbin, the Remax long drive tour player, 551-yard drive. And as I've said before, there's no way he's doing that if he didn't have Two Under on. So if you want to increase, I don't think this is a marketing thing by them, Darren. But I'm going to say, if you want to get longer drives, wear Two Under.
551 yards, that's about 6 shots for me.
There you go.
Even with Two Under.
I think you'd have to put on 6 pair of Two Under at the same time to hit it 551 yards.
Hey, one thing I found out in my purchasing experience, too, was I think it's $100 minimum and you get free shipping. So not only are you saving 20% by using the GNN20 code, promo code, but if you buy enough, you know, you're getting free shipping as well. So it's a deal on top of a deal.
And you can't beat that. All right, two under, that's the number two, and then undr.com. You can get more info. You check out the incredible styles. They also have, we should mention, ridiculously comfortable loungewear. And you want to check that out too. Remember, use the promo code GNN20. You'll get 20% off your order, and you can and you will thank Darren and me later. All right, let us go from the incredible comfort and performance of two under to the incredible comfort, performance, if you will, and absolute joy that is Cabot, one of those rare places. And we speak from experience after a couple of trips, generates a palpable sense of excitement when you arrive. This is the way I feel about Bandon. Darren, you've told me you feel this way about Sand Valley, the Prairie Club. There's places you mentioned where all you have to do is say the name and you physically change, and you can't wait to dive into it. So let's talk about Cabot, all it has to offer, and frankly, I don't even always know where to begin.
Oh, man, it's such a great place. And, you know, that sense of excitement that you mentioned is one of those things that when you're at a resort that has that, where everyone you run into who's just arriving is like so excited to just go experience stuff. You know, and the place to start at Cabot right now, since it's all the rage, is the Cor Crenshaw designed Cabot Cliffs. So we'll start there. I mean, it's big and bold and fun. It's got crazy holes like the Signature 16th, which I think everyone on the planet has seen pictures of. It's got the blind drivable par 4 17th, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. But so many memorable holes. But at the same time, Mitch, I think you and I found it to be just fun and playable and just a good time out there. We played one round with a former LPGA tour player and her friend, and there couldn't be a wider disparity of the four of us and our games, and we all had an absolute blast.
We did. That would be Tara Fleming. I'll give a shout out to Tara, a fantastic person, and we did have a great time. And I think, you know, I agree. Of course, it was the first time that we played it, because of the expectation, and you're kind of wondering, and you've seen pictures of 16 and 17 and some of the other holes. But I totally agree with you. I think what really comes across while you're out there in the midst of all the stunning scenery and everything else is it's really just fun. I mean, you can have all the challenge you want, but it really, really is just fun. The hole's different. The moat on number two. Number three, there's a huge middle bunker that you want to stay away from. We're just giving you a little bit of a heads up. Number six, multi-layered three par, 13, unbelievable four par. That saucer green, Darren. There's just all kinds of design features that we were aware of as we went through it the first time. And I think with the more you get to go around and the more you play it, the more you're going to pick up all the different nuances. I loved, and you can touch on this, though, Keith Cutton, who we had on, and he used to live right by the 14th. And I keep imagining when he told us that, I keep imagining being able to wake up in that spot, walk outside, see the land, watch it develop, and then get to play it.
Yeah, that's probably one of the more visual par threes. I mean, everybody talks obviously about the 16th, and it's beautiful. It's stunning. It's right there, you know, on the ocean. But the inland par 3 14th is just a stunning hole when you stand on it. You know, it's surrounded by trees. You can see the spot where the little house was back there in the distance. There's a crazy bunker on that 14th that is like tucked back into the trees that you look at. And when you discover it, you think to yourself, what the heck? Why did anybody even build a bunker right there? And it's just there. I don't know if anybody ever hits it in there. I can't think of anybody did on our trip. But there, you're right. There are so many greens that are fun. There's so many holes that are tucked, kind of the putting surfaces are tucked behind rises and mounds. And it takes so much imagination to play the golf course. And it's just fun. And the 15th, as you get down to that 16th hole, the 15th is a par five that's reminiscent to me of one of the really great holes at New South Wales in Australia. And the hole at Cabot Cliffs is even better, but you come over the rise and you just see this par five where the green is down at the cliff's edge and nothing but ocean, but beyond it. And then you head to the 16th from there, the tee box, the back tee box to the 16th is actually down a little path that's behind the 15th green. There's so much about it that's fun and imaginative that I can't tell people enough, not only to go to Cabot, because we're going to talk about so many things we love there, but that if you go playing these courses multiple times, I would highly suggest that you play, you know, you try to play the Cliffs at least three times and the Links at least twice. But if you could play both of them three times while you're there, you'd be doing yourself a service, because by the third time around, both courses just really even light up more because you understand everything that's being done and what you have to do to try to play them and try to score on them at that point. The first time you're just overwhelmed, you know, it's so beautiful and crazy and the fun and the holes just hit you in the face. And but by the second or third time, you really start to get a grasp of what Coren Crenshaw tried to do out there. And it ups the level of enjoyment so much more.
Totally agree. One of the other things about the Cliffs that I love, let's talk about the cookies. It's not often that you talk about great golf courses and then mention cookies. But if you are a cookie freak and a sweet freak like Darren certainly is, like I am, one of the great things is on the first, when you walk up, you're getting ready to play, I don't care what time of day it is, there's chocolate chip cookies. Oh, yeah. It might seem like a little thing, but to me, I just went, this is going to be a good day. I don't care what I shoot. These cookies are great. These cookies are great. And then you finish after you play 18, and it's one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Any of you that follow Darren and I on social media may have seen a picture that Darren took of me on one of the wicker couches. There's chairs, there's couches, benches, things set up behind the 18th green on the Cliffs. And the vantage point from there is stupid. I mean, it's so good that you really almost can't believe you're at, well, I couldn't. I was sitting there and I couldn't really believe I was sitting there. But you have an unbelievable view. You can watch people play 18. You've got the ocean there. You've got the sunset. I haven't seen, there's great spots, there's great 19th holes, but this was so unusual to come off the 18th green, look up on that rise, and see actual couches up there. And to me, that was mind-blowing.
Oh, such a great spot. And I mean, you mentioned the cookies. I wanted literally a cookie per hole. You know, I think I stole more than I was allowed to on the first tee on both courses. But man, you just, it's power food. It gets you through the opening few holes and actually could sustain me. I could eat just cookies the entire round.
Well, you're strange. I don't know how else to put it.
Item number four is the Lynx course itself. And obviously we've become familiar with Rod Whitman and Keith Cutton. Keith was on episodes 89 and 90 here of the podcast. Rod Whitman, I came in contact with at the Algonquin, another great redesign that those guys are working on. And the more I know them and the more now going back, and like you said, this was our second trip, I've grown to appreciate the Lynx more. I didn't realize, the first time around, I wanted it to be bolder. But now that you've got the bigger boulder cliffs to compare it to, the Lynx being so much more subtle and really elegant in a way is one of the things I love about it. And it's no less fun than the Cliffs. There are some outstanding holes. The par 4 number 6 Cape hole that just kind of wraps around this harbor with lobster boats bobbing in the background. The multi-angle par 5 11th, I just absolutely love. There's a great double green out there that they built that's shared by the par 5 8th and the par 4 13th. And then you climb up the 13th, and you've got this little drop shot of a par 3, the 14th. It's under 100 yards. And when the wind's blowing, you just, you know, it's like the 7th at Pebble. You just don't know what you're going to get, what you're going to have to hit. And then the closing holes at the far end of the property, just views for days. You know, we've looked at Brian Orr golf photographer extraordinaire, Drink. We've looked at his photography for a long, long time. He shot some great, stunning pictures of that end of the property. And it's just, I don't know what to say about it. It's the perfect complement. These two courses together are as good a 1-2 punch as you're going to find maybe anywhere in the world. I've certainly played a lot of places, and I can't think of many that would top it.
And I have to say, I agree about the coming back to the links. And I'll give a shout out to Ben and Dunes in the same way, because there's so many options at Ben. And when I went back this last trip and really played Ben and Dunes again, it gave me a whole new appreciation for it, because I had all these kind of really big, really bold Old Mac, Pacific Dunes, you know, other courses to compare it to. And I was absolutely drawn to, I love the fact that you said you called Cabot Links elegant, because there is, it does have that quality. It's a softer, subtler quality, but I was really drawn to it. And this time at Cabot Links, I feel the same way. There's so many different, as you walk and you go through this entire property of the links, there's so many different looks. Weren't you blown away again by that?
Absolutely. It really takes you through some different terrains in a different way. You cross that road, you play that par three, and then you play the cape hole I mentioned, number six. That part of the property feels different.
It does.
Than the others. But the golf course doesn't feel different. The golf holes feel like they're a part of this routing. And I know there were some changes to the routing early on to kind of make all that stuff work. And it's just, it's a sublime walk. And I think a little easier walk to me than the other one because it's not quite as up and down, and the terrain's not quite as severe over there. But there are a lot of fun golf shots on the links.
Yeah. And it definitely is an easier walk.
And the biggest one, the to me, in some ways, the most fun shot on the links is the 18th hole. And the par four closing green is literally right outside the Panorama restaurant. So
you close. Love the danger factor here.
I do. I'm sure that there are people who bounce approach shots off the shatterproof glass windows. No one I've ever played with has hit the Panorama while we've been playing. But I got to think there are people who are doing it because it is so close. And we're going to talk about it a little bit more. It's actually one item all of itself going out on that hole when it's lighted at night. But that hole being that close and the fact that people are right there looking through the windows at you, it is one of the craziest just locations for a green. Our friend Eric Hart, as we record this, is over playing Ardglass today in Northern Ireland. And I'm always talking about a par three there where there's this little building that's almost right on the green. And the Panorama, the 18th at Cabot Links, is like a ginormous version of that because it's not just a little building. It's a giant restaurant that's right there with these floor-to-ceiling windows. And there's just something about that I think is so cool. And the fact to envision building that hole in that way is just something I would certainly never come up with, and I'm certainly glad they did.
Yeah, I think we both agree on that. We've had both inside and outside number 18 experiences, both you and I.
Correct.
When you play it, you have that experience. When you're inside, either eating or having a drink right on the little, it's not a porch, but the little
patio.
Patio, thank you. For some reason, that word was withholding itself from my brain. When you're sitting on the patio, you deal with it, you know. So it's great all the way around. Let's stay right there and talk about the Panorama a little bit. We've already said one of the best 19th holes anywhere on the planet. You go in, you have sunset with dinner. Because enough great stuff hasn't happened during the day. So they say, all right, here's dinner. And the sunset is right outside.
Oh, baby. And we were there. When we were there on our first trip, there was just a glowing orange ball of fire sunset while we were having dinner in the Panorama. And I still remember it to this day. It's just such a beautiful sight looking out those windows from the slightly elevated upstairs there. It's Man, if you catch the right sunset, it's unbelievable.
Anytime you split that word up into syllables like Darren just did, you know it's good. The food, obviously great. Obviously, the seafood.
Forget about it.
Forget about it. If you're from Brooklyn, forget about it. And I love the way it's split. It's more formal upstairs, more casual downstairs. You can eat on the patio on a nice day. Obviously, watch out for the wayward approach outs we just talked about. But Darren, when it comes to seafood chowder, I know you're a freak. And I mean that in a good way. You're an absolute seafood chowder freak. You flipped out. I watched you down 3 or 4 bowls a day when we were there.
Basically, cookies and seafood chowder is all I need when I'm there.
The bunch diet.
And a little bit of Highland Park, which you're going to mention here in a minute. But it's the seafood chowder. I'm not sure what it is about it. It's got a little truffle oil in there. It's got all the good seafood stuff you want. It's just a tasty, tasty delight. And it's heartwarming, you know, it fuels your soul and gets you ready, especially if you're catching some cold weather while you're up there, which is possible. But we've had particularly good weather when we've played at Cabot on both of our trips. So, you know, I can't get enough of the seafood chowder, and it's one of those things. I would literally drive up there to just eat seafood chowder.
You know what I just had? You know how we've talked, well, a number of podcasts ago, but about the fact that you're a shower whore?
Yes.
I'm going to tie this in, trust me. I just had an image of you in a room at Cabot with a shower. You're taking a shower, and they've specially set it up so out of your shower head comes seafood chowder.
I thought you were going to say bathing in it.
Well,
just a big bathtub full of seafood chowder.
Sorry, that image was a little bizarre. I was just saying it would be nice if they rigged it so you could have that come. Then you'd just stand there with your mouth open. You wouldn't even have to move, which is your kind of workout regimen, as far as I know.
That is exactly the way I would like to be fed.
You touched on the Highland Park, and it's pretty interesting and great. If you're a single malt person, if you're a whiskey lover like we are, to be able to have the kind of whiskey list that they have at the Panorama, I think kind of blew us both away.
Oh, man. You know, I'm drinking right as we speak some Highland Park 18. It's very rare that I see that on a menu anywhere. Not only did we see that on there, but we saw even the next level up of Highland Park on their menu. Pretty much any whiskey you wanted, you know, all the good ones were on the list, and we were looking at it. I remember we were snapshotting it with our phones and sending it to our whiskey buddy, Tom Mackin, who's also been on the show. And who turned us on to Highland Park originally. So, you know, if you want to drink, so basically, if you love to drink, if you love to eat seafood, if you love really cool Lynx golf, you'd need to go to Cabot. It's as
okay.
Simple as that.
Goodbye. Nice talking to you.
End of podcast.
Right. All right, before we leave the food area, let's just quickly go kind of down the parking lot a little bit. We've stayed right on property, but just down, like a half niblick, the Cabot Public House. And this is a great other option for eating and drinking, being merry. It's got a great pub vibe. And it's really, even though it's really close, it almost feels separate. It's like a little bit different thing. They've got live music there. The food is fantastic. Great drinking. Darren, you saw something there, and I remember you had told me about this.
Well,
it was the first time you'd seen it.
It has all the different libations you could ever want. You know, it's got, so it's, you know, if you're a beer drinker, if you're a whiskey drinker, if you like, you know, kind of signature drinks, whatever. One of the things I thought was interesting was, you're right, it feels so much different from the property, and it's literally just steps away. I mean, it's walking distance from where your room was on the trip. One of the things I loved in there, as you alluded to, is the buy a drink chalkboard, where you can write a message for a buddy, buy them a drink, even if you've already left, or just, you know, to make a big deal about the fact, like if you and I were going to have that, if we'd had a wager and I owed you a drink, you know, after the round or something like that. I could write a little message up there about it. It's just a cool feature, and I've never seen anything quite like it. I'm sure they're out there. I'm not buying people. I don't drink beer, so I'm not buying people beers a lot. You know, I'm a whiskey drinker, but it was a cool little thing. And I was looking at the menu in preparation for this podcast, and I realized one thing we missed. Next time we go, the Cape Breton lobster boil at the public house is what we definitely need to do.
All right, done. Why even? That wasn't a question. That was really okay.
That's right. Now, back to the 18th on our list. As we move down our list of nine, this is actually number seven on our list, and we alluded to it. Having a drink and putting with buddies on the actual Cabot Links 18th hole. They have lit it up. There's a big spotlight that lights up that hole. You can go out there and putt in the evenings after dark. We've seen this other places, this feature. Our friends at Tobacco Road have done it with their Cabot, with their Stewart cabin that's on the 14th green at Tobacco Road. But Cabot was the first place we were ever introduced to this in such a cool way. On our initial destinations trip, where we had Brian Orr, golf photographer extraordinaire, drink. And our friend Vic Williams, who is Golf Tips managing editor extraordinaire, I guess.
Drink.
You know, we sat out there, we drank, we hit some putts, we had a good time. This time around, people who know us from the social media have seen that you and I and our good friend Ian McNeil from Tourism Cape Breton had a putting in the shadows contest that was just simply awesome. And I almost made a putt from across the green to win that contest. And it's one of those, it's a buddy trip item that you just can't miss, man. Get a couple of drinks, go out there. As long as you're not freezing your butt off, putt around on that green, putt into the shadows. It's too cool.
And, you know, now that I was just, while you were talking about it and that night with Ian and being out there, and it just really occurred to me, it really hit me. Not that it didn't before, but when you've been away from it for a little while and you miss it the way that both of us do, what an amazing way, because you wake up, we're going to talk about the rooms in a second, but you wake up in these ridiculously great rooms. Your first hit on the day is a view of outside. You're at Cabot Golf. You go from there to either the links or the cliffs or both. You eat there. Then you go and have a hit on watching other people finish. And as a way to wrap it up under the light in the dark, you have a chance to spend the actual end of your day at the 18th green. And if you want to talk about bookended days that are, if you're a golfer, perfect, that's one of the things that I just, it really hit me. I can't even explain it big time about how great that is.
Yeah, it is a wall-to-wall perfect experience. We're going to talk about Ben Callendore and how he put it together. But, you know, one thing about that day too, we ran into a couple who was on their honeymoon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you were two people who love golf, and in this case, it was Morgan Bell, who we knew through Twitter, had some exchanges with, and then happened to be sitting next to them at dinner and realized that that's who it was. You know, it's a place for couples who love golf. It's a place for buddies. It's a place for foursomes. I think I could show up there by myself and have a great time and find, you know, just find people. You know, the fact that we met Tara and her friend Kim and had an absolute blast playing golf with them. Mm-hmm. It's such a melting pot of just golf lovers from all over the world. And that kind of a day from the minute you wake up all the way through putting out on the 18th after dark is what makes these experiences the reason why we want to talk about them, why this podcast exists.
Yeah, and I think good point. The another common denominator, and we'll mention Bandon again, and there's certainly other places, Sand Valley, and there's other places that have this. But the distance you have to go to get to Cabot and to get to Bandon, which adds to the excitement we talked about before, the anticipation of being there. But it also means that anyone who is at these places, and Cabot is certainly no exception, really wants to be there. They've made an effort to get there. And so they're passionate. They love being there the same way we do. And I agree. Let's talk about the rooms just for a second. We mentioned Ben Cowan-Duer, what a fantastic person he is and what a great vision he had for this whole area. But one of the things, Darren, we got to spend time with Ben, certainly on our first trip. We had a great time with him. I had a wonderful interview with him. We've seen him a number of times after that. But the fact that he was such an avid golf traveler and would take experiences that he had and bring them back to Cabot, it's not anywhere better reflected than in the rooms at Cabot. Everyone looks out toward the golf course and the ocean. Think about that. Every room. The bathrooms are great. The rooms are great, spacious, but not too spacious. Perfectly sized, perfectly appointed, everything in there. I remember saying to you on this trip, one of the small touches that I loved was, I love having coffee first thing in the morning. So they have a coffee, not just a coffee maker, but a lot of times there'll be a coffee maker and powdered creamer. And I happen to put a little cream in my coffee. Powdered creamer makes me nuts. It makes me nuts. At Cabot, you open the little refrigerator and inside are little individual creamers. Now, obviously, it costs more money to do that, and they have to keep refilling those in a different way. But they've taken the trouble, and it may seem like a small thing, especially to somebody who doesn't drink coffee. But for somebody like me, I look at that and I go, bravo. Great. Perfect. This is exactly the kind of stuff I'm talking about. All the details they have accomplished, and both times we've been there, I think each time you kind of felt more and more like they got it right.
And those are the things that really are probably overlooked by a lot of people. You know, I'm in the process of doing this for Pacific Gales, where I just make lists of places when I'm there. Of, hey, here's something really cool that someplace comes up with. I was in a hotel in Scottsdale where there was a hamper. And I thought, why doesn't everybody have a hamper in their rooms? And so I make these lists, and I'm sure Ben's the same way. And it's those little details that are going to make the difference. That's what makes the difference for a small segment of the people. But those are the people you hook. Those are the people who want to come back, not just because of the golf, but because you anticipated everything they wanted to make that stay memorable. And for me, and this is the last item on our nine, speaking of the little details, and we've talked about them all, the cookies, you know, the 18th green being lighted. But when you walk into the room, the carpet is designed in two colors with a green putting strip that runs the length of the floor, basically from the door you walk in all the way to the glass window or sliding glass door that looks out to the golf course. And at the end of that is a movable brass putting cup. And I bought one. Don't steal them as much as you'd want to. I bought one as a souvenir, and I use it at home almost every day. And it was just one of those cool touches that, hey, we know you're going to be on the golf course almost all the time you're here. And when you're not, you're going to be eating and drinking. But if you just haven't had enough golf, or you've got to work on your putting because it was atrocious, like mine was one day there. Here it is. Hey, I putted pretty good one of the other days. Yeah. But just here, putt it, and putt it from all links, because you've got this basically, I think it's 2 feet, 3 feet wide, green strip of carpet to putt with this really cool brass putting cup at the end. And man, it's just one of those things. It made me want to buy one because it was such a cool little feature. And which reminds me of the other putting cup detail that I think is just insanely cool at Cabot Cliffs, is that the cups all have a little, I don't know what it is, a little metal piece in them. So when you roll in a putt, a little bell rings, like a little chime goes off, basically, and just echoes. And I asked somebody about it. I heard that Ben saw those in Japan somewhere, and we haven't talked to him. We're hoping to have Ben on the show at some point, but you know, it's just a perfect touch to a perfect experience. And it's those little things throughout the property that maybe more than anywhere else I've ever been, and that's saying something, attends to those little details in a way that just makes the experience so cool and so memorable. The fact that we were able to just put together this entire list of all these things that just made us smile while we were there just is a testament to really what he did and the vision of what he put together at Cabot Links and Cabot Cliffs and the whole Cabot Resort.
Yeah, and we could go on. We're gonna get to another kind of different and highly unusual part of a podcast for us now. But before we leave the things we love about Cabot, we would be remiss if we didn't mention, and we've talked about it before, the incredible service. The people, and you would expect it there. You would expect that they go out of their way, anything you want, anything you need. A lot of, obviously, the best destinations and places take care of that. But when you're in Inverness and it's a small town, you've already got the Cape Breton Island experience and feel, and then you step onto the property at Cabot, from the minute you do until you leave, they've got you covered. Everything about it is just makes you, just like Darren said, you smile. You just walk around smiling. I think I looked pretty stupid the whole time we were there, just because you never have any other facial expression.
You're giddy. You're literally giddy the whole time that you're there, and that is a rare feat for any place to pull off.
All right, let's turn. Let's do kind of a, it's not really 180. It's more like a 36 degree turn, because we obviously love the cliffs. We obviously had a fantastic time, but I kind of like this because you're the one who said to me one day, afterwards at some point, there's things that could be better.
Yes.
Even as great as it is, there's things that could be better. So we're going to kind of get rolling a little bit on five things that we decided could make it just a little bit better. Hopefully, these are our thoughts. I don't know how many other people feel this way. We're just throwing them out there. So let's do it, Darren. I think this is a good way to do it.
And honestly, in what we do, we don't do this enough. And so some people are going to see this as being overly presumptuous, but I think that one of the parts of our job when we go to these places is to look at it with a little bit of a critical eye, as well as just turning people on to all the great things. And there's so many great things. And Cabot Cliffs is amazing. I want to keep saying that. It's unbelievable. But as I said earlier in the opening, we dare to dream how it would be even more amazing-er. Especially for the average golfer. And that's kind of the way I'm looking at this. Now that we play Hickories, you know, I see the game from a different lens that I think is more kind of how the guy who's 50 plus, maybe only in his 40s and doesn't hit it particularly well, but wants to go play these places. And I kind of see it from that standpoint, and I want golf courses to cater to that guy, because I think that's, one, the guy with all the money, and that's, two, the guy who wants to go back to these places. And so we came up with five things that we encountered. Some of them are design. Some of them are playability. Some of them are easy fixes. Some of them require us spending a little bit of Cabot Cliffs money. Our friend Mark Stewart at Tobacco Road always likes to say that I'm a guy who loves to spend other people's money with my suggestions. But here they are. And the first one, it was strange to me that at a place this level, that we never had a pin sheet. When I asked a caddy, and we played with caddies on all of our rounds, I suggest people do that. But when I said, is the pin front, back, or middle, especially on holes where we had these mounds in front, or a pin was tucked into a hollow or something like that, a caddy had to take his laser gun. He had to go find a line to that pin and stand on a yardage marker. And then, you know, if he's standing on the 150 marker and his yardage marker, you know, his laser says 160, then he knows the pin's in the back and vice versa. To me, a pin sheet just seems like a no-brainer. And I'm not entirely sure why they veered in the direction of not using one. I would love to ask that question, and we just frankly haven't asked it yet, but I would love to see a pin sheet because not everybody's going to use a caddy. As much as we love them, you know, there are times, you and I, even when we were out there shooting our video and doing things and playing some golf holes in the late afternoon, didn't have a caddy with us. You know, we played 17, we played a couple others, and, you know, it was hard to figure out in some cases just really where the flag is.
Right. And so I agree with you on too is it's a really simple fix.
Right.
This doesn't require anything other than knowing where the pins are and printing up some pin sheets.
Yeah. I'm with you. I still don't understand why it wasn't done. And honestly, we were there last summer. So maybe for the new season, which is getting ready to kick off, maybe they've changed that. I don't really know. But moving on into a couple of playability items. The par 4 fifth hole is a beautiful classic Cape hole. It runs with, there's wetlands and views for days down the left side of it. The hole runs up and then back down. You have to carry a giant bunker that hides the right side of the green. If you can pull that second shot off, especially when the pin is tucked behind kind of that hidden area, it's such a memorable hole and a memorable golf shot. It's really an awesome hole, except for the player who's playing it a little shorter. Let's say you don't hit a very good drive. Let's say your second shot, you're way up on top and you have to hit it down and you have to lay up short of that bunker because there's no way you're going to carry it. And you can't really try to ride it into the neck between the bunker and the wetlands. So if you lay up on there, what we found in playing is that most of the shots that land in the middle or the left side of that fairway short of that bunker, they bound toward the wetlands hazard on the left, and they either end up in the wetlands or they end up in a little bit of high grass over there. It's another one of those things that, to me, it wouldn't be that difficult to fix to help keep these guys in play. And when I'm thinking about playability, that's really what's on my mind. If you're already laying up on a par four, if you're that guy, unfortunately, for whatever reason, bad tee shot, bad second shot, you rolled one off a tee, whatever, you know, don't further penalize that player with a penalty as well. You know, the good players, they're hitting it up around the corner and then they've got a nice iron into this green and they're attacking. But most of us, as we found out and we talk about all the time on this show, aren't good players. We're probably average players at best.
So when we talk about easy fixes, this one would obviously require going back in and leveling that fairway layup area because there is no other way to fix that particular problem.
Or building it up on the left side.
Well, I'm just saying there's got to be some way of changing that fairway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not unlike at the beginning of the show when we talked about the 11th at Rio Bravo Country Club, which I don't want to compare the two because the fifth hole at Cabot is a vastly superior hole in all ways.
Now they're going to raise the rates at Rio Bravo. But, you know that.
But it's the same thing. You just need to raise that left side a little bit so that the people who are hitting it and it takes that bounce and it doesn't end up just putting you in more trouble. It's already bad enough. You already got a third shot that you got to try to, you know, hit a flip shot in there of some kind or hit a runner through a little neck. So, you know, that's one of our suggestions in the list of things. And these guys, especially Coren Crenshaw, they're looking at their golf courses all the time, you know, and seeing, well, what have we done? What have we had? What haven't we done? You know, what can make it better? The best designers are always doing that. We hear about it at golf courses all over the world where tweaks are being made. That would be a good tweak for this one. The other one that would be a good tweak would be on the seventh. The par 5 seventh is probably certainly the hardest tee shot for the average guy anywhere on the property. And sometimes golf holes just get a little overzealous. Sometimes it's because of the land plan. Sometimes it's because the architect had a vision for something that didn't quite work out. In this case, you know, they had to carry this extreme wetlands. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with the carry. The problem is the tee shot on this long par five, I think it's 557 yards from the silver tees, which is where most guys are going to play it from. And if you want to go a tee box up on this specific hole, and you were playing the next tee boxes up, you'd be playing the golf course much, much shorter throughout the golf course. And I don't think that would be as fun. So I think the silver tees are where it's at for people. But in this case, if the wind is blowing and you're trying to hit it over this, they put a couple bunkers on the other side to try to catch you if you've hit a fade. But it's still, we watched a lot of people pump balls into the wetlands. And like for you, I think about in playing golf with you, Mitch, the silver tees are probably okay for you throughout this golf course, except for the seventh. And I'd put you at 30% to be able to hit it in the fairway on the seventh.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not because you're a horrible player. You're a player who's played for a long time. It's just a really tough shot. So my suggestion looking at it when we went through it the third time was to look at, there's a cart path that runs down, and you take that cart path to get around the wetland. It also separates the number two fairway, another great hole, the hole you mentioned with the moat. You could build another silver tee box down there that would shorten this hole, would shorten the carry. Yeah, it would make it an uphill shot to get it up on the plateau of the fairway, but it would take the difficulty, it would reduce the difficulty of the carry by half, probably. And it would also be at an angle that would be, you know, for the guys who hit it left to right, which is most of the players that we know in existence, it would give them a little better chance. And so, you know, that's another one of my suggestions that I think, you know, this could be a better hole from those tees. The guys who are really good and are playing it from the next tee back, you know, and the back tees, let them hit it the full carry of where they are. But the average guy, I think, is playing from those silver tees, needs a little bit of help on the par 5-7.
Yeah, totally agree. All right, let's move to, there's two other holes we want to talk about as we work our way through the course. The ninth hole, which is a par 3, is a stunning par 3. When the pin is on the right side of the green, it's an unbelievable backdrop. When the pin is front left, though, this becomes a tiny little shot. a cute little, tiny little shot. And it feels like the ideal spot to play it, like many play the par 3 13th on Bandon Preserve. The best way to play that, and one which we did when we were there, is to use the putter. But there's a big problem. There's a gravel road that separates the tee box from the green, which stops you from pulling the putter, obviously, unless you like crazy bounces on gravel, which personally, I don't think either of us do. If you fill in the road and you put that pin, you know, where you can put it, then it's going to be a whole lot more fun. It's going to be a whole lot more memorable, and it will come in the at the end of that front nine, and it's going to be almost a surprise, Darren. When that pin is there on the front left, it'll give you something that you haven't had certainly in the previous eight holes, but something where you can really go, oh, look at this. This is really cool. Here's an option I didn't have before.
Yeah, exactly. It's that whole stretch is a little strange in that the golf course doesn't return back to the clubhouse, or what is the clubhouse now, which is
right.
Basically temporary yurts until they build an actual clubhouse, until the end of the 10th. But that ninth hole is so, like you said, it is gorgeous. It's so cool. When that pin's in the back right, mm-hmm. and you're playing and you can hit a wedge in there, it's so much fun. But I tried to hit putter over that little road just for that very reason when the pin was tucked up front left. And it feels to me that if you're going to leave the road there, you almost can't put it there. I mean, it's like such a hard, weird, little, delicate, crazy yeah. shot that let people putt it there. Why not? You built this short hole. You built a hole. I mean, it's only like 70 yards or something like that at the most, and it's down the slope. So yeah, I'm all in favor of taking the road out, and that's the only thing you need to do. All you gotta do is grass in that road. You know, they can still use it as a road, just yep. don't put gravel on it.
Yeah, no, you know? I agree.
And a lip.
Yeah. When you think about the preserve and the great all the great shot possibilities that exist there abandoned. These are the same guys that did that. So yeah. Why would they not want to come in and go, okay, this is a change we can make. If you're listening, Mr. Core, Mr. Crenshaw, we won't call you Bill and Ben. It's a little too presumptuous. All right. Finally, on this list, we've talked about the 16th hole. We've talked about almost every hole, but we talk about the 16th and the mind-boggling, incredible nature of that par three.
And let me say one thing about the 16th, and we didn't put it on this list because I don't think it needs to be. I don't think it needs to be fixed, but I will say this about the 16th, that the pin placement on the left side of the green, which is up on the highest part of that green and has kind of some mounds to the left of it, is probably the hardest iron shot that you'll have anywhere on the golf course if you have to try to hit it in there, because it requires somebody who really can play to be able to hold that green and hit a little draw in there. When the pin is off to the, when pin is in the middle or the right on 16, it's just, it's such an easier, I dare to say easy, because it's not an easy hole in any way, shape or form. And it's so cool and it's so beautiful. And I love the way they built it, but boy, on the 16th, the left-hand pin placement is just crazy difficult if you want to try to hit it really close. Yeah. They give you plenty of place to bail out, obviously. There's bunkers down there to save you. And I think you had to putt it one day on the 16th from like way down on the right side, up the slope, up that rise to try to get it up onto that thing. And it's a fun putt. It's the kind of putt that you find on golf courses that we rave about on this podcast, because it really requires you to hit just an amazing putt and challenges you to do it.
Correct on all fronts. Yeah. Anyway, so let's talk about the 17th. Correct. Well, I was. You clearly are in your own little Darren Cabot world. All right. So the 17th, you get off the 16th, either shaking your head, jumping up and down, laughing, whatever you're doing. And then you get to the 17th and you're standing on the tee and amazeballs comes to mind. One of my favorite words. Literally one of the great holes, one of the great tee shots that you'll have anywhere. There's only one problem. If you're not playing with a caddy, even if you are, and they can give you a clue about where you want to try to take your tee shot. But certainly if you're not playing with a caddy, to go up to the zenith and can stand up there and actually watch your tee shot after you've hit it, you may never find your drive. It's not something we often say, especially about designers like Cora Crenshaw, but on 17, as beautiful it is, this is definitely a possibility, and it happened while we were playing. It's hard to explain if you haven't been there, the way the hole works and this drive that comes bounding down a fairway that after you hit it, if you hit it at all far enough, and then go straight down to the hole. And there's so many places it could wind up. And when you get up there, even if you've really clocked one and you can't find your drive, if there's nobody there to spot it, I don't think there's anything more frustrating. And you and I talked about it when we were there. There's possibilities that you can be off the fairway, not find it. You can be down in the bunker that fronts the green, which we know happened. There's so many places, and in terms of pace of play, in terms of frustration, there's a lot of possibilities. Put a course marshal there. Have a spotter up there for non-caddy groups. Do something where you don't have to worry about that part of it. All that you'll concern yourself with is hitting it. Hitting a good drive, and then you can have the kind of experience that this ridiculously great 17th hole will dictate once you find your tee shot.
Oh, it's such a fun hole and such a great tee shot. And we debate blind shots all the time here at Golf News Net, but, you know, I mentioned Eric Hart earlier. I was telling him it's one of the most fun golf holes I think I've ever played. But you can, not only the places you mentioned where if a bounce here or a bounce there, if you're, you know, threatening the margins left or right, you can lose a golf ball, but you can drive it through the fairway too. I mean, through the green, as well. And, you know, so it's, there's so many different variables when it gets up there, and you're right. You know, it's one of those things. It's a somewhat easy fix. Again, it's spending money because you got to pay someone to go do that. But if you're playing in a group and you've got two caddies, one of the caddies will always go up there to the zenith and will watch those golf balls. But if you're out there as a group without a caddy, man, having a guy up on top there to be able to see those golf balls land and know where they are so that you don't have to go up there and look and look and look and try to figure out, because it is completely blind, and you don't really understand the hole unless, one, you've played it before, or two, until you get up there to the zenith of the hole and look down and just, you know, that whole coastline just opens up in all its glory because you've got the 17th and then you've got the 18th beyond it. The view from that top point is just extraordinary.
Yeah, it is. All right. I think we have covered, it's been almost an hour, Darren, and I think you and I have spent many, 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 many hours not just being there, but talking about it. The obvious point of our discussion and any we've had about Cabot is from the standpoint of we've been there. If you haven't been there yet, shame on you. We're giving you a little bit of heads up on the things we like and a couple things that might make it a little better. But hopefully it will spur you to want to get to Cabot. If you've been there already, this will only make you want to go back, which Darren and I both do all the time. So hope you've enjoyed it. Darren, always fun talking about this place. After all the episodes and all the talk about Cabot, let's never talk about it again. Until
we go.
We're getting ready to go and we go.
That's right.
In which case, we'll do this again.
And for the people out there who want to know more, obviously the Cabot website has tons of information, but also many of our previous podcasts, we've talked about flying into Halifax and driving to Cape Breton Island, all the different things that you can do on Cape Breton Island, places you can play in Nova Scotia. Just our previous episode talked about that as well. So, you know, do all the research, but do everything you can to get to Cabot and play Cabot Links, Cabot Cliffs, and just experience the whole grandeur that is Cape Breton Island, because it's an amazing, amazing place and one of my favorite places anywhere on this great planet of ours.
Totally agree. And hopefully, as we're here in May now and coming into the season to do this, the next 4 months, 5 months are going to be unbelievable. So hopefully you can get there during that time. Darren, thanks a lot. Always a blast, man. Go out to Rio Bravo. Take Ragsy. Take Theo. If I were a dog, I'd say take me. but I'm not. But have fun out there. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks to the listeners. Obviously, we couldn't do without you. Follow us on the social medias. Rate us on iTunes. And by doing that, you will help us spread the word about places like Cabot and all the great, the best in golf travel. For now, I'm Mitch Lawrence. He's Darren Bunch. Thanks for being with us. Go run down your dream. So long.